welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Today's topic is, what happens next in the CPU and GPU wars? My guest today is the creator of the Moore's Law is Dead YouTube channel and Broken Silicon podcast. He creates videos and writes articles containing in-depth commentary and analysis of what's going on in technology, gaming, and computer hardware. He also recaps the news and interviews people working with the gaming and semiconductor industry on Broken Silicon. In fact, I first met Tom. He invited me on his Broken Silicon podcast. It was the first podcast I did. I think it was sometime last year, and it got me interested in podcasting, and now we have Semiconductor Insider. So thank you, Tom. Welcome to our podcast.
Well, I mean, you know, thank you for coming on that one. In fact, it was so, I just think there was a hunger to talk to someone who really had a deep knowledge of the fab history. One of my fans was so inspired, they wrote out the transcript of the whole thing and we condensed it into like a two-page article, condensing our best parts of the conversation. So that's how much some people, again, not, you know, some of the more, I would say, mainstream gamers, a lot of it, they didn't care about what we were talking about. But then some people, they liked that detail. And one of them liked it enough that they rewrote the whole thing after listening to it. So thank you for coming on that.
I guess I'm flattered. That's good. Hey, listen, Tom, let's talk about you a little bit. I mean, what brought you to semiconductors?
I mean, video games. And, you know, I don't know what the average age of your listeners are, because this is going to sound very kiddish and sophomoric probably, but whenever someone asks me that, whether it's a dumb thing or not, what I think of is arguing with people in the lunchroom about if the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3 was stronger or better. And that made me go, you know what, let me look this up. And what I found is that even if I liked PlayStation or even if someone liked Xbox, no one knew what they were talking about. Like the specs on the Xbox were not what they said they were. The PlayStation had more limitations than the PlayStation fanboy said. And since then, I've just always been obsessed with the latest gaming hardware releases. And I think it just kind of hit a fever pitch for my enthusiasm probably in about 2018, you know, when AMD started coming back and talking about how I was just blown away by the price to performance the PlayStation 4 brought to the table. And it used some of the same types of hardware AMD was bringing to desktop. So it all kind of aligned where I just started reading more and more and more until I yelled into a camera. And I mean, it got bigger and bigger. And it really is just this drive to like actually understand at least a little bit what we're gaming on, why it performs or doesn't perform the way we want it to, or hopefully it does.
Yeah, you know, gaming hardware is a big deal for the semiconductor industry. You know, it pushes the performance and the different capabilities of the CPUs and the GPUs. So it is a big deal, and it's a big deal for the fabs, of course. And, you know, it was amazing when AMD came over to TSMC, because then I got a little bit more involved. NVIDIA was always at TSMC. You know, the AMD GPU was created by a company called ATI that AMD acquired. I don't know if you remember, but ATI is a company I worked with years and years ago. And I was just so amazed by those people. And then they got acquired AMD, and it went to the AMD fab, and everything went silent. But now that AMD's out in the open, and now they have a new leader, it really is an amazing story. So let's talk about the CEOs first. I think CEOs have everything to do with the success of a company. So we have, with the companies that we're talking about today, we have Pat Gelsinger, who's new, which is a welcome change, of course. Jensen Huang, who's the CEO of NVIDIA, and Lisa Su. So do you know these CEOs? Have you researched them?
Well, I mean, I have to a certain extent. The majority of my opinion of the CEOs is just anything that we talk about. I can't know everything. So I basically research what I believe I need to know to give an opinion about what's going on inside the companies and how that will affect upcoming products. And there's just no way around it. For example, within AMD, the enthusiasm behind Lisa Su is just incredible. And for those who don't know, I actually worked in the automotive industry before I started doing this full time. And I was there in the early Mary Barra era. And I'll tell you, the CEO matters. Like, she knew what she was doing. She brought GM back from the brink. And everyone was working hard because they thought not only was someone in charge who knew what she was doing, but she was both listening to people and leading in a way that people knew what to do before they knew what to do. And so I know firsthand what it's like to have a new CEO come in and turn things around. It's not coincidence. And that's my opinion of Lisa Su in a similar way. And I saw her in person at Hot Chips 2019. And there's something you can't get across on camera, that in person, this just complete tenacity and savviness, this wicked sharpness to answering questions on stage. Like, she could be answering three at a time. That just gives you, it has to, it's infectious. It has to affect what's going on in the company. And I hear similar things about Pat, right? Again, I'm not going to go through his whole history and evaluate what I think of him. I haven't met Pat. But what I can say is people inside Intel, when he became CEO, their enthusiasm just doubled. And then a few months after he was there, everyone just started saying, man, I'm just glad Pat's here because things are turning around. And it's not a coincidence. CEOs matter.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've been following all three companies for years. I've been working with them. You know, I've been in the industry for 40 years now, and CEOs definitely make a difference. And, you know, Intel has just had a rough patch with CEOs, unfortunately. You know, with NVIDIA, Jensen's been there since the beginning, and I actually know Jensen. I've met him a few times, and I tell you, he's an amazing guy. He's my favorite CEO out of the three. The guy knows how to pivot, and the guy knows how to talk. He's got swagger, but he's humble. I tell you, that company, I credit, you know, 100% of their success from Jensen, and then the people, you know, that he recruited and has kept, has maintained. I mean, you don't see a lot of turnover over there at the executive staff, and he's done some good acquisitions. I think he's number one, but I think Lisa Su is definitely number two. I do know of her, I don't know her, but a good friend of mine, Lisa started out at IBM, and he was a cubicle next door to Lisa, and so he had some funny stories, but a brilliant, brilliant woman. So I think it's a pretty fair match between the three.
Well, let me say this too about Pat. So I can't go into detail, but I was talking, people know I do leaks and I leak upcoming products, and sometimes that catches people's attention. So I actually was contacted recently by someone pretty high up at AMD. This person just wanted to talk to me, like, just, I think this person was given a directive to find out what makes me tick, because AMD is curious at this point, because I guess I'm on their radar. And this person started asking me what I thought about Intel, and, you know, without them even asking more questions, I even gave some examples. I said, you know, there are these upcoming architectures Intel's working on that sound ridiculously just aggressive and ambitious, and I can't say more than I've been told I'm allowed to say, but Pat's made decisions where he's like, you know, this one feature, we can't lose it unless we get this level of a single core performance increase. So I want you guys to focus on, you know, not doubling IPC maybe, but if we can get to 40, 50% more and not lose all, you know, this one major feature, then let's do it. Now, if you can double IPC, then it's worth losing this feature. The previous CEOs supposedly were just like, you know what, we're gonna be in charge forever. This is the impression I was given from talking to people at Intel. So let's just try everything. Let's do everything. Let's try to, you know, get to a node three times as dense instead of 50% more dense. Let's just go for everything. Let's do all these moonshots because AMD's never gonna catch up to us. And it caused Intel problems. And I have like specific examples of how Pat has specifically said, we're not doing this moonshot, we'll go for this one. And these ones, can you just give me a 20% increase every year? There's some specific examples of how a good CEO can turn things around quickly. It's my understanding that that's what Lisa did as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, Pat's new, but I think you're starting to see the effects. And, you know, Pat's been saying a lot of things that I don't necessarily agree with, but you have to really understand that, you know, what he's saying externally versus what he's saying internally might not be the same thing. And you know, Pat seems to embrace the half-step methodology, you know, rather than, you know, biting off more than you can chew as far as the process side and what you were saying. And, you know, that's something that TSMC mastered, thanks mm-hmm. to Apple, because Apple said, hey, you got to give me a new process version every year. So take these half steps rather than, you know, these huge steps. And as it turned out, you know, some of this technology stuff like EUV is really hard. So taking a half step was the right thing to do, you know, introducing EUV on a mature node, et cetera. And I think that's Pat's attitude as well. And I don't think he's copying TSMC based on what I know about Pat. That's the way he has always done it. You know, he wants to be cautious. He wants to succeed, but he wants to be a leader. For, you know, first and foremost, he wants the company to be a leader, and Intel really needs to be a leader. They're not really architectured as a follower, right? So I think Pat's the right guy.
I mean, they should be a leader. I mean, look at their size. My understanding too, I'll say about Pat is he, I don't know all the history, but I've heard that he was kind of a candidate or wanted by a large part of the company to be CEO a long time ago and was passed up on it. So I'm guessing that from his perspective, this is making up for lost time, that there's been years of him thinking, maybe, I don't know, I don't know for sure, but, you know, we could be doing this right now. And he knows where Intel could be I bet under in his opinion, if it was managed the way he thought it should be, and I think he's just for him, this is just we are going to ascend to where we should have been already, and we will do it because I know we could have 10 years ago.
Yeah. So let's talk about chips. Let's first talk about CPUs. You know, Pat Gelsinger came out and said that, you know, AMD's days are numbered somewhat. In fact, his actual statement was Alder Lake and Sapphire Rapids CPUs will put an end to AMD's time in the spotlight. I mean, what does the landscape look like with what is shipping today and what's coming out, you know, in the next year or two?
You know, what I would say is that when someone says AMD's days are numbered, that's kind of not saying a whole lot. Everyone's days are numbered. No one's on top forever. You know, they said the sun would never set on the English Empire. And I guess they were, you know, wrong eventually, but there were 100 years where it didn't set. So that's my opinion on AMD here is, will Intel beat them? They could. But I don't think they're going to beat them overall next year or the year after that. 2024, especially 2025 and 2026 is where I think it's going to get interesting. But up until 2026, I don't see this overwhelming efficiency architecture advantage in all, you know, sectors that they are competing in for until then. That's what I believe. And I can't say too much because I am working actually on a report on some new architecture AMD's working on. But what I will say is, a lot of my recent leaks about Intel have been about Intel and have been looking at these pretty radical performance increases they're going to try to do, I believe, around 2024 with Lunar Lake, Nova Lake. I might not know quite as much as far out as AMD. I'll just admit I don't. But what I'm starting to hear that's coming out next year sounds like Intel should still be worried in all departments. So I just think AMD's in charge in at least server efficiency, of course, not market share for the next couple of years. And I think in laptop, they're going to be competitive for a couple of years at least. And desktop, I do believe Intel will trade crowns with AMD every now and then. But depending on how good Zen 4 and Zen 5 pan out, I wouldn't be so sure AMD is not just going to jump right back, you know, where a lot of the AMD hardcore people would expect them to be to keep ahead of Intel, because people got to remember that Zen 3 is a year old. So if Alder Lake beats it, which doesn't really, mostly just ties it. Yeah, good. It's a year late though.
Right. Yeah, you know, I remember when AMD's market share primarily was they're not Intel. Like, so people wanted AMD to be around so they would buy AMD products and single digit market shares. But now AMD over the last few years have earned their place. And you know, you do these calls. I mean, I've been on a couple calls with you. We do these calls. I do them every week. And some of the calls are with the supply chain. And some of them are people that make these boards for the data centers or gaming boards and stuff. So they buy CPUs and GPUs and then manufacture the final product. And, you know, 3 years ago, I think it was all Intel. And so, well, yeah, we have people looking at AMD now. But the last year or two is oh, they're buying AMD, you know, and I'm telling you, I saw it coming just based on these calls. And AMD's latest numbers, you know, validates what these people were saying. They were telling the truth that people are starting to buy AMD because of technology and not because they're not Intel or because Intel can't ship parts or Intel's too expensive or something. But they're buying based on technology. And that's a big thing. And that's hard to unseat, right? You know, if it's price, you can change your price. If it's delivery, you can change your delivery. But technology is a different sell, right?
Yeah, I think it's hard to unseat, and there's something to be said for just bringing up the word momentum. And AMD has a lot of momentum now, far more than they've ever had, in my opinion, ever in their history. And a lot of these server people I talked to, I did a lot of interviews with server people, probably late 2019 through mid 2020. And they all said, we don't expect to switch to AMD as that soon, meaning I was like, could be next year. They're like, no, it takes years to plan this stuff. Probably not for years. But those security issues Intel had, a lot of them said, you know what? We're actually going to switch earlier than we ever have before. And once we switch to AMD, it's going to take just as long for us to switch back to Intel. And there's so much momentum AMD has now in server and laptop that so many people I talk to, you can see it from gamers. They ask, when is this getting an AMD laptop version? I mean, people should Google Razer, R-A-Z-E-R. They only used Intel pretty much forever. And they recently just added an AMD laptop, and they added it before AMD's newest gen comes out next year, which is Rembrandt. And that's just, there's a fever from gamers for more AMD stuff. And that fever takes time to redirect. It just does. So I think even if Intel is really impressive with Alder Lake, which they've already we basically know they are impressive. I think a lot of gamers are kind of stymied about Intel for another year now, kind, almost no matter what, in a similar way to how they were about AMD, where it really wasn't until Zen 2, like three gens, Zen 1, Zen Plus, then Zen 2, that people finally realized AMD is back. I think it might take a couple of years for some gamers and some companies to switch some of their plans, because a lot of people just didn't think Intel's going to have anything for years. And even if Intel comes back sooner, well, plans are made years ahead of time.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I think the big switch came with AMD, you know, Jim Keller and a few other guys did it, but they also changed, you know, from the GlobalFoundries fabs to the TSMC fabs. And not only did they change, they became intimate partners. And, you know, I would say that they're the number two partner right now, right behind Apple. And that means that they're getting intimate knowledge of the process, and they're able to develop, you know, intimately in step with the new technologies. And so, you know, starting at 7 nanometer and 5 nanometer, and then again at 3 nanometer, I think AMD has had a process advantage over Intel, and that kind of has shown as well. But, you know, at 3 nanometer, Intel signed a wafer agreement with TSMC. I think that's fairly public now. And mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting, because it's the first time AMD and Intel have been on the same process. So this is going to be a designer's world, right? It's not going to be, oh, whose process is better? It's whose design is better. And honestly, I give AMD the advantage, because they've been working with TSMC for three nodes, and this is fairly new for Intel.
Yeah, and I think that, again, the stuff that I'm starting to hear, like, let me just say this now, like, there is an approach I suspect AMD is going to take to Big Little, like the way they're going to go about designing and forking off architectures to make smaller cores. The way AMD seems to be doing it, without getting too far into it, it seems very cost effective and easy to execute on reliably. And so, again, all I can say is I don't really place bets on who wins anything. All I know, and all I'm trying to communicate to some people a lot recently, is that I know Intel is not doing this 10% every year, adding a couple cores every year thing anymore. They're as aggressive as AMD, and we're just going to have to see who executes better. And I would also tell everyone, when they look at future architectures and current ones, please, please just take as many steps back as you can for perspective, because my God, I from my perspective, AMD was ahead in since Zen Plus. I mean, they had 8 cores that were using less energy than Intel's, that were on smaller dies. They didn't win gaming performance by a certain amount. And I just want everyone to remember that if Alder Lake, again, just to use an example right now, takes the performance crown in gaming by, say, 10%, that's going to be while using double the energy with a bigger die, to my understanding. It's a huge monolithic die, Alder Lake. And this is going to be something where, just because you won by 10% at one thing, they've still got so much ground to make up in competing with some of the other parts of Zen's architecture. I think anyone who thinks Intel is just going to, again, I don't like automatic. They're not going to automatically outdesign AMD. I would not place bets on that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, AMD is really embracing the chiplet type thing. And you and I talked about this on your podcast. And, you know, I said chiplets was cheating. And, you know, I'm a big monolithic die fan, and I do SoCs, so that's monolithic. But the more I look into chiplets, and the more I look into AMD and TSMC strategy, it really is a brilliant move. As you said, it's going to be more cost effective, because you can mix and match these dies, you know, with analog mixed signal. I mean, you can put a 28 nanometer block onto a 3 nanometer chip, and you put them all together. And you know, the trick is get the timing and all that stuff together. And, you know, AMD is taking the approach with TSMC where it's open, right? TSMC is very big on open ecosystem, and everything's open. Intel looks like they're doing the same thing with what they call tiles. It's a chiplet, but, you know, Intel has to, they like to make their own name.
Every now and then they accidentally say chiplet, by the way.
I know, I heard that. Pat said it. So anyway, but you know what they did is they actually took a YouTube video down and put another one back up in its place, just based on this last week's conference. One of my forum users put up the video of the conference they did, the technology, innovative technology, which I attended, and he said, hey, this one was taken down, and so they put up an edited one. But yeah, everybody slips up. It's not a big deal. But the thing is that Intel has a certain way to do tiles that's very proprietary and very closed secret, and they're not going to disclose that to anybody. And that's the Intel way, and I understand that. But the downside is you don't have an entire ecosystem working on it. And you know, that's the whole advantage of TSMC is their R&D is paled in comparison to Intel or Samsung, but they have the R&D of all their partners and their customers, and it's trillions of dollars instead of billions. And you know, open systems sometimes work out quite well, whereas closed systems, you know, could go either way, I guess. But I think the chiplets are going to do well for these CPU companies, because there's so many variations they want to do and so many different applications that, they're going to go for, which, you know, like Apple, they do one SoC for a phone, right? Mm-hmm. They're in a different business, right?
Yeah. And, you know, let me say this about chiplets too. I've been thinking this recently that I can't help but think that a large part of the chiplet idea wasn't just so you can make dies bigger than you could before, nor that you could just mix and match. But I mean, going to 28 nanometer and 20 nanometer and 16 was so painful. We got stuck on nodes far longer than these companies expected. I can't help but think that when AMD was designing Zen back in, you know, I mean, it would have been like in 2014, 15, and even a little before that, this was during that era where it was starting to take longer and longer to get to new nodes. And even if some of the new nodes aren't as impressive of a leap as they used to be right now, it's just funny to think that like 7 nanometers at, I don't know, absurdly high yields compared to what I believe AMD expected, and 5 nanometers even better. I can't help but think that a lot of Zen's chiplet planning was around the idea that the smaller we make the node, the worse the yields are going to be. So this will just help us mix and match so much better. And that's not as much of a factor as I bet AMD expected it would be.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, if you don't yield on a huge die, that can be, you know, a killer, right? And so, yeah, I get that. But you're right. You know, TSMC has done a good job, at least for 7 and 5. For 3 nanometer, you know, it's still coming out. We'll see how it goes. You know, you have to understand is if TSMC doesn't get 90% yield, they're disappointed, whereas some of the fabs, 60% yield is a good deal, right? And, you know, AMD coming from Global Foundries, which had some issues with their 14 nanometer, I think that's probably where that was born, that idea was born. But I still see upside in it. And again, they can go either way. But it's good to, you know, plan for the worst and hope for the best, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about GPUs. You know, I got involved in GPUs with ATI 20 years ago, I guess. And I worked for an IP company, and that was our biggest customer. And I was the executive sponsor. And what that means is anytime there was a problem, you know, the guys would give me a call, right? And I, you know, ATI had very few problems. And they were just such nice guys to work with. It was just an amazing company and so successful. And GPUs were not as big as they are today, you know, as far as multiple applications, right? Because back then it was just laptops and PCs. But, you know, then they were acquired by AMD, and AMD's been a good, had a good run with it. In fact, back then, by the way, when they acquired them, they separated them in two, and they called it AMD Red, which was ATI, and AMD Green, which was AMD. And I know that's a bad tone, in my opinion. You're the red group versus the green.
That's not a good idea. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. But now GPUs are a critical part of computing, and you know, NVIDIA, oh my God, you know, they have just elevated the GPUs performance and the different applications for GPUs and AI and stuff. But you know, what does the landscape look like today with Intel's got GPUs now, AMD and NVIDIA? I mean, who's winning, who's losing, you know, who's got what?
Well, it's funny you bring up how much they're used now. I was talking to one of my sources who said that a lot of the people he talks to now, they're talking about GPUs becoming a commodity in the same way RAM is. That every system's going to need them, that they're used for accelerating all types of applications, and that they're just going to have to make a lot more. And that a lot of this is just a war of logistics in terms of, you know, quote unquote, who's winning the GPU war. And right now, NVIDIA is very good at that logistical war. If you were to ask me who had the better GPUs last year, AMD or NVIDIA, Ampere or RDNA 2, it's an easy answer. I think RDNA 2. I'm not even afraid. It's not even a question, in my opinion. AMD has, you know, even with that node advantage, they're just making, it's just so much more consistently scalable. I just did a video where I analyzed scaling of Ampere's performance based on TDP and then also based on raw bandwidth and teraflops. And Ampere is all over the place. I can tell you a TDP, you cannot tell me within 10% where the performance is. AMD, it's almost 1-to-1. It's crazy. Like AMD has made a more impressive architecture that's smaller, more efficient, and you can say it doesn't quite get to the same performance as Ampere, but it's within like 5%, and it's using a heck of a lot less energy on a smaller die doing so. If they made a bigger RDNA 2, they would have just crushed NVIDIA. They just didn't, you know? So in that regard, AMD has caught up in technology rapidly, and that's really exciting. And I believe RDNA 3 coming out probably late 2022 is going to take the performance crown. I've had it suggested to me indisputably, you know, so they might just take it by a solid 20% in all regards. Now, how many of those will they produce, right? Because it's really hard to plan how many, because they buy these allocations ahead of time. So are we going to make this many cards when we know that NVIDIA's mind share, their brand recognition is so powerful? And are we really going to make 1 600-millimeter squared GPU when we, you know, or two of them if it's multiple dies, right? Because it probably is. When we could be making like 10 chiplets for Zen 4, like I know which one's going to make more profit. And that's something AMD has to struggle with. Now, the good news is I think people are underestimating what AMD is going to do with 6 nanometer to pump out some lower cost, high volume ones below their flagships. But I still have it suggested to me that at least, and this is just what people are expecting, that NVIDIA is just going to outship AMD next year, even if they lose performance. So I think a lot of it's just going to come down to logistics, and AMD just keeps getting better at that. But in terms of performance, they're very close, and Intel is going to be behind in performance, but I think they're going to be impressive in their own right when they launch Arc on desktop quarter two and on laptop quarter one next year. And Intel's somewhat of a wild card, so we'll see. And Intel's going to, when they launch, compete with, let's say, upper mid-range or lower high-end cards from a year and a half ago, like just below a 3070 Ti, just below a 6800, you know, that type of performance level. But they're coming out a year and a half late, even if they're better efficiency. It's not that impressive, in my opinion, but it's a first step. And I think it will be really good at certain tasks that the others aren't quite as good at. And we're just going to have to see what DG3, you know, what they do in 2023, because I would not rule out Intel continuing to slowly get towards top performance as well. I just wouldn't bet on it yet, but I think a lot of people expected Intel to go away with Xe, and I don't think they will. So I don't know if that answers your question or if you have any specific things to discuss about that.
No, that's actually a great landscape. And by the way, I think Pat Gelsinger is focused on the GPU business. So I think Intel is going to do a good job there. I think they're committed to it. So I agree. And, you know, the Intel name still carries a lot of a pull. So I think they'll get a decent market share. So I would not count them out at all.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So PC and gaming is definitely big markets for you. But what about the data center? Do you see that? Do you have any exposure to the data center business?
The way I would answer that question is I have to. They share architectures, they share design teams, or they have design teams that will work on one non-data center product and then move to data center. They talk to each other in the cafeteria. There's a lot that's shared there. And who's winning in data center? I mean, can tell you what they're capable of in gaming. You know, the money's in data center. So when you see AMD just crush it with Epic, and then people are, I mean, again, it's just a lesson to people's coverage of early RDNA 2, just doubting it would compete with NVIDIA. It's like, they just killed it with Epic. So if they want to, they will make a good graphics card, you know? And so, yeah, I do pay attention to it. What I don't typically know is off the top of my head 5 years from now what the name of it is, but I do follow it. And that's something I just expect AMD to be in charge of for the next couple of years. But I also know of some crazy things Intel's working on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I see a lot of data center stuff, and I talk to the suppliers in the data center market, and they were even more cautious than the gaming guys about AMD. Now I'm starting to see critical mass. You know, people will come on a call and say, hey, you know, I'm 1 out of 10 AMD, right? So, you know, 1 out of 10 of my customers are looking at AMD or using AMD and stuff. And now it's almost parity for the data centers. And this isn't necessarily what's in the data centers today, but this is what's coming into the data centers. This is what people are now gearing up for and qualifying in order. But I think AMD, in fact, their numbers just recently, I forget what they posted, but their data center business is just exploding, you know, and where Intel posted, you know, kind of blah numbers, AMD is still posting, you know, big digits, and, you know, their market is smaller, so it's easier for them to double, right? Whereas as Intel is huge, but still it's quite impressive. And I think the data center is being won over by AMD, at least for the time being. It's a very fickle market though, so it could go either way. But I've not actually been impressed with AMD, you know, in the past, you know, 10 years or so ago, over the last 2 to 3 years, wow, I have seen nothing but progress. And and they are literally killing it. And the data center is one of those markets for they're just going to do quite well.
Momentum, you know. A couple of years ago, everyone I asked that was speccing out the server upgrades for a couple of years in the future, they kept saying we want to use AMD eventually, but we don't want to right away. And they got so fed up with what happened with Intel, both with their shortages that came to Intel first, really, with their 14 nanometer shortages, but caused by people just building up their data center capacity because they had to, because of performance losses from those security issues. They were so fed up with Intel that once they make the decision, they've made it. So they're moving to Zen 4, they're doing it, or Zen 3, and that momentum is going to carry AMD. And I don't think any of those people are worried or looking back just because Intel is making a comeback maybe sooner than some people expected. My understanding is Intel is going to have Sapphire Rapids, and that's going to be competing with possibly a V-cache-laden Zen 3, a Milan X, that is just 64 cores that is about the same performance versus Intel's 56 cores. And then you're going to move to Emerald Rapids from Intel in 2023, maybe early 2024, and that's 64 cores, you know, 10% higher IPC maybe, but just 64 cores. But then AMD is going to be on Bergamo with 128 cores. They're going to be moving to Turin, which I just saw from a leaker I pretty much trust, I really trust quite a bit, Executable Fix, who says that AMD's moving to 256 cores in like 2024 or so. AMD is going to be like massively ahead in core counts and efficiency in data center, I think, for the next 3 years. And they just have that momentum of everyone deciding about a year ago, we can't wait anymore to see if Intel's coming back. We just have to switch. These security issues are just killing us. We're pretty sure AMD is going to be better for the next few years. And I think that still was a very safe bet for those people to make. And I don't think they're just going to switch because they know Intel's competing better in a few years from now.
Yeah, I agree completely. Hey, listen, Tom, this is a good place to stop. We're definitely going to have you back. This was a great conversation. I want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. You know, subscribe to Moore's Law is Dead and Broken Silicon.
Absolutely. Check out Tom over on his sites, and we'll see you guys soon. That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day. We'll